Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinathi Guma. And joining me to wrap this week up are independent analyst Chris Gilmore and Rikus Reeders from PSG Wealth Sandton. Thank you very much to the both of you for joining us. Digestion, seems like the markets are always digesting something. US inflation came out this week and markets responded with fury. Starting with you, Chris, what was your response to that?
I wasn't surprised. It came in at 8.3 as against 8.5 previously. I think the markets were looking for a much bigger reduction than that. And so I think this rather hot number, it took them a little bit by surprise. And of course, so what it really has done, it's reinforced the view, the belief that inflation is becoming unanchored. To use a well-worn expression that Tito Mboweni used to use. Now, he was very good in his day as Minister of Finance, not Minister of Finance, as Reserve Bank Governor when he talked about inflation. And it's a very good way of looking about it. It really talks about inflationary expectations. And inflationary expectations in the US are starting to get unanchored, I think. And the same in most parts of the Western world. And that is a worrying feature. And markets are picking up on that. And if that is actually indeed going to be the case, and the authorities are not going to be seen to be getting on top of this, then I think they're going to get progressively more and more spooked. And it means that they're going to do things that they otherwise wouldn't do, like have 50, 75, maybe 100 basis point increases just to try and get inflation under control. Because, I mean, and Rikus, you'll remember this, back in the 70s and 80s, when inflation was well into double digits, it's the devil's own job, really, trying to get it under control when it's at those kind of levels.
All right. Chris saying inflationary expectations are starting to get unanchored in the U.S. Rikus, just taking in that U.S. inflation print, I mean, did you fully digest it or were you left with uncertainty and maybe more questions?
Well, as Chris said, it wasn't unexpected. I thought the hope that it was going to come in lower was just a hope. Considering where we are currently, and not merely as a result of shortages and logistical problems because of the war and COVID in China, but also looking at wage growth in America, the fact that the Fed is trying to adopt policy in the face of a possible slowdown, not only in the American, but in the global economy, plus the fact that there seems to be a problem with, shall we say, the retail side in the U.S. economy, if you take a look at what their inventories look like. In other words, there's possibly an oversupply of inventories, which, again, puts pressure on margins as far as U.S. companies are concerned. So there's a lot going against a unexpected fall in inflation. As Chris correctly said, that expectation of more trouble to come is embedded, and you miss it by a little bit, and your markets react or overreact.
Yeah, and we have seen actually the dollar rising and rising as the Fed gets more hawkish. And of course, the Fed doesn't seem like it's going to be taking a U-turn in its aggression in monetary tightening. There is a question here about the dollar. The dollar is quite high at the moment. Do your guests perhaps have any thoughts on the future direction of the dollar? Can it actually strengthen even more from here? So the motivation for asking is, I want to buy some platinum stocks for the long term, and as commodities are priced in dollars, I'm hesitant to go long right now with the dollar this elevated. Chris, your thoughts?
Look, the viewer is quite right. I mean, there is this inverse relationship between commodity prices and the dollars, one would expect. So as the dollar gets stronger, commodity prices tend to get weaker. Now, in previous turnarounds, recessions, call them what you like, the dollar has tended to strengthen initially and then started to weaken a bit further into it. Not so sure that's going to happen this time around. Well, maybe not to the same extent, because you're finding people, speculators, are piling into the dollar for different reasons this time around. They're seeing this as a kind of safe haven. Normally, they'd be piling into gold, for example. That's not happening this time around. gold is seen as the ultimate inflation hedge, and it's not really attracting an awful lot. So therefore, I think the dollar may stay stronger for a bit longer. And again, much depends on the longevity of this wretched war in Ukraine. And unfortunately, I think that's going to go on for a lot longer than people imagine. This is turning into a proxy war between the US and Russia. And I think the Americans are quite happy to keep it simmering along like this. It allows them to test out all sorts of new weaponry in in somebody else's backyard. And so inflation is going to remain high. I think the dollar will keep on attracting a lot of funds. And, you know, the Chinese can talk about withdrawing money from U.S. treasuries. Well, are they really doing that? Are the Japanese really doing it? Not really. We couldn't really care less what the Russians are doing because their bank accounts are frozen. So I think the dollar may well stay a bit higher. In the longer term, I think the viewer is right. You know, there will be a time when commodities will start looking very, very good again and very attractive. And maybe this is the time to start nibbling away at some of these platinum stocks.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, we have seen those commodities taking quite a beating. I mean, you look at even the rand above 16 rand against the dollar. It was really cushioned by commodities for a long time, but we are seeing a turnaround in that. I mean, what's the main culprit for the commodities taking that much heat, Rikus?
The stronger stronger dollar, I think, as Chris mentioned, is playing a major part in that. And as to for how long it can stay where it is or go higher, it's the fear factor. It's being used as a safe haven. Secondly, obviously, with China now entering its fourth month of lockdowns, as far as I know, I mean, there's been a huge cut in production on their side, that, you know, specifically for commodities that were elevated 4 or 5 months ago. So that situation has got to resolve itself. I think once the COVID wave in China gets less, or, you know, as it subsumes, you'll see Chinese stimulus starting to kick in. I mean, there's already speculation that the authorities might cut interest rates on Monday. So one might get a little boost from that. I would prefer to wait, as far as specific stocks are concerned, for these things to bottom. I don't think it's going to be a sort of a V-shaped recovery. You know, platinum mines are off about 40% from their recent highs. So I would really like to see a turnaround rather than trying to pick the bottom. And then also, specifically, again, local platinum shares. The higher platinum price is not going to solve their production costs problem, as far as electricity is concerned. So the price might go up, but you have to be able to mine the stuff. So just keep that in mind as well.
All right, let's talk about coal. There is a statement from a viewer. Coal futures up again, $391. That's up 287% in the last 12 months. The more we talk about it, maybe Transnet may fix the problem sooner rather than later. So that's the thing, though. You know, there's now increased demand for South African coal, particularly from Europe, as the bans on Russian energy escalate. Chris, does this extend the life of coal miners?
I'm hesitant to say yes. Yes, theoretically it does. And I think Rick has touched on this maybe from a slightly different angle. One of the great difficulties that we are experiencing in South Africa is physically getting the coal to where it's needed.
Yeah.
Courtesy of Transnet. I mean, you mentioned it as well. It's becoming more and more of a problem. I mean, sometimes the rail track doesn't even exist anymore. It's been scaled. So, you know, this is problematic. So we've got plenty of coal, got wonderful, great, high-quality export coal. And as you rightly say, there is great demand for this in the rest of the world, notably because of a lot of sanctions going on to Russian energy exports. So while the ducks are quacking, it's nice to go out and start feeding them. But having said that, unfortunately, and we're seeing this all too familiar repetition of what we saw in 2008, where physically getting the product to market because of being let down by Transnet, I think is happening again.
Yeah, really the main problem is that we can't get the coal out of the country quickly enough. Just on the other side of that coin, I mean, we have seen financial institutions coming out and saying that they will not be funding new coal projects from a certain time. Considering this demand that we are seeing for coal, Rikus, at this time, is it not premature then for banks to pull back on financing for miners, for coal miners?
It seems like it, doesn't it? I mean, you can't transit. I mean, I'm all for a greener economy, but you can't just, it's not like switching a light on and off. So, yeah, if the banks don't want to do it, somebody else will come in and say, well, it's fairly obvious that there's money to be made here, as dirty in brackets as that, yeah, as that money may be.
Yeah. All right. Let's go on to another question going into the retail space. Panel's view on SPAR's long-term perspective and dividends. Chris?
Yeah, their results will be out shortly. I'm not a great fan of SPAR. Look, I think the idea to go offshore was actually quite a good idea. Mm. You know, they haven't gone really into the rest of Africa like many other retailers. And that's proven to be quite a good thing, in fact, in retrospect, perhaps fortuitous. The countries in which they are located, Ireland, they've actually done reasonably well. And in Switzerland, they've succeeded in spite of themselves. There've been a few interesting reasons for why they've done reasonably well there. Poland, they're taking a bit of pain. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to carry on. It's going to carry on for a while yet. And locally, you know, yes, they're turning around. They had a good turnaround. If you look at the figures, what happened with the improvement in the liquor side of things, but everyone did. I'm just not awfully enamored with SPAR. I think if I'm going to be in that space, I'd rather be in ShopRite.
Mm, all right. Actually, another question I was going to ask, going to you, Rikus, is there a better retailer than SPAR?
Well, I think for the moment, ShopRite, although one must take into consideration that it's not exactly cheap at current prices, but yeah, they've managed to beat everyone else as far as home deliveries are concerned, and SPAR is now trying to play catch-up. I'm sure the system will be okay. You know, they've had time enough to make it work. It just depends on the adoption by your retailer locally. As Chris said, SPAR's doing well in Ireland. They've turned Switzerland around. They are taking pain in Poland. As I said last week, Friday, I think Poland is a very interesting country at the moment because of the increased US involvement in Poland as far as the military is concerned, and the military was always followed by industrial invasion. This is just as the whole political, geopolitical landscape is shifting away from, let's say, Germany as your counterpoint to whatever is coming from Russia. And I think that's shifting towards Poland as the main point of interest.
Mm. And I actually want to go into the UK. There seems to be a lot of activity happening there in terms of the property sector. We have a number of JSE property companies that are exposed to the UK. And sometime during the week, we also had news that Capital & Counties they're working out a deal to merge with Shaftesbury. How are you looking at that market in the UK, Rikus, for property?
Gee, I think Chris will probably know more about it than I do, but I think as with any, shall we say, property cycle, it really is tied to such an extent to what's happening sort of on a macro level with the country that your property is located in.
Yeah.
And then obviously also the type of property we're looking at it, or we're looking at. So at the moment, considering interest rates are going up, not only in the US but in the UK as well, that will always put pressure on the comparative advantage, of a property giving you some kind of return.
Hmm. Chris, your take on that?
Yeah, the UK property market, I think, is heading for a big crash. Across the board, residential particularly, it's hideously overpriced, and it has been for quite some time. And, while you had low interest rates, that was fine. And, you know, you had the furlough scheme and all this type of thing. And look, I mean, and Rickers has touched on some of this. You know, you've had these high wages in a lot of Western countries, including the UK. And that's still the case. But the UK is probably going to enter recession this year, if it hasn't done so already. You're looking at inflation 10% by July, according to the Bank of England. So, you know, it's going to be a very, very tough outlook, I think, for the residential market. For the other parts of the market, it's a different kettle of fish altogether. I'm not sufficiently equipped to really give you an answer on that one, but I think the residential side is probably poised for a beating.
All right, let's go into South African residential, the South African residential space. Someone is asking, is Calgro A a buy or not? And I'm thinking surely that counter should benefit from a constrained consumer because they provide low-cost housing. Rickers?
Yeah, they, I don't follow it that closely, but they came up with a decent set of results, or at least a trading update. And considering where they were as a result of the pandemic, you know, a year, year and a half ago, it seemed on the face of it a nice little turnaround. They have changed their strategy over the past 2 years, where, you know, from renting to merely developing, as far as I know. Obviously, there's still the interesting side bits like their cemetery business that gives some kind of alternative stream of income. So I still think it's an interesting company. They've been languishing between about R3.50 and R4 for more than 18 months. So technically it looks like they might be building a base, and it actually looks pretty good just on that basis. But yeah, I would have to go and take a look at it more from a fundamental point of view before I can say, okay, this looks brilliant or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, and within that trading update, it's saying that they expect a 9-fold jump in a profit, and we did see the markets cheering with that, up about 11% of that share price at some point. Chris, do you look at Calgro M3?
I have over the years as an arty, and as I was saying off air, they've got a remarkably diverse shareholder base. And I think that shareholder base is going to hold it in very, very good stead in years to come. And, you know, the memorial parks, as they call them, the cemetery business, I think that was an inspired choice. And they're in the right niche. You know, in an economy like South Africa's, which is languishing, that's precisely where you want to be. So, look, I think their communications company is going to have the work cut out. And they do a very, very good job, by the way. But they're going to have to do an even better job over the next little while, because I think there's going to be a lot more interest in Calgro M3.
All right. Which would you be interested in, Rickus? Sappi versus Mondi in the packaging space. We did have a Sappi yesterday coming out with quite solid results, saying that they were able to up their selling prices to offset inflationary cost pressures, and saying that they are seeing quite a lot of demand. Your thoughts, Sappi versus Mondi?
I'm sort of going straight back to Chris on this one. As far as, you know, remembering for a very long time, as we started on the program. So I'm probably clouded by history. So SAP had good results until next time. Maybe I'm wrong. But as far as the quality of operations are concerned, I'm all for Mondi. I think the fact that they are going to lose quite a decent money spin out of Russia is probably mostly in the price, doesn't distract from the other business. And also taking into account that it is a cyclical company, but certainly quality-wise, I'll certainly go for Mondi rather than Sappi.
Sappi versus Mondi, Chris. Rickus is more of a Mondi fan?
Rickus is being very diplomatic here. I'm going to be less diplomatic. They're both sunset companies. I stopped looking at them a long, long time ago. Frankly, I can't be bothered. They're purely for traders.
All right. Let's take a look at the technology sector, Naspers. Do you see Naspers as cheap and a good price to buy in, or would you wait, and for what level, Rickus?
Cheap can go cheaper. I think this, just from a graphing technical perspective, it must hold at least 650 rand as far as process is concerned. all depends on what's going to happen with Tencent. That depends on what the Chinese government's going to do. I mean, at some stage, it will be viable. You know, Tencent is not going to go down the tubes if legislation is, you know, is as it is at the moment. But who knows what's going to happen over there. And really, as far as processes overseas operations are concerned, they really have to start generating income, and that's still a while off. So at the moment, if I was going to go into tech, Naspers would be fairly low down on the list tonight, and I'd rather go and take a look at, you know, for example, US tech companies, where a lot of tech companies have been masquerading as growth companies, and they're now getting exposed as cyclical companies. Okay. But all tech companies are being sold off. So go and take a look at the real growth companies, whether it be Microsoft or whatever, and go and try and pick a bottom there if you want to go and do that.
All right. I'm not going to ask you about Naspers, Chris. I'm actually going to stick to that Industrial 25 complex and ask you about Richemont. There's a question here. Richemont is expecting to come out with an operational update soon. Do you see it as a good buy? Last time I checked, it was about 170 Rand.
I've always liked Richemont. And, you know, they I think, confounded a lot of the skeptics during the pandemic when it was realized that luxury goods actually did rather well. And their portfolio is really quite superb. Again, I think much depends on what happens with this, with China and its zero COVID policy. Many people are going to be unable to go and actually physically buy in China, because they've got a huge exposure to China. The other thing is that quite a lot of their exposure does come from duty frees around the world, and you're seeing that taking off again. I mean, international travel is taking off again, no pun intended. And so that's actually looking good. So I think the extrinsics for Richemont are actually all in place now.
Rikas, your take on Richemont, and maybe in that luxury goods space, would Richemont be the one that you would go for, or maybe would you go for like an LVMH?
Yeah, you know, if you just go and take a look at what was driving the French market at the moment, it's luxury goods companies, and as a direct result of what's happening in China with lockdown, and you know, is there going to be a market recovery for luxury goods or not in China? So Richemont is fairly heavily exposed to the Chinese market. So if you're stuck with a choice, I agree with that Richemont over here is probably getting to a fairly fair value, but would prefer something like Hermès just because it's a little bit more diversified.
All right, let's go construction. Raubex has really been coming out with a lot of good news lately, saying that they expect headline earnings per share to be as much as 268% higher than the previous comparable period. Chris, what are you thinking of Raubex's positioning in the construction sector?
Always liked Raubex. I mean, in road construction, it should be an absolute no-brainer, you know, given the state of South Africa's roads. We've never really had it fulfilling the kind of promise that's always been there. Great company, hell of a well-managed. I do like it. And at some point in time, I think we are going to see this thing really zoom. Yep, I like it.
All right. Do you like it, Rikas, Raubex in the construction sector? Or maybe would you go for something like a PPC or maybe WBHO?
No, I think as Chris has said, quality of management is concerned, Raubex is the obvious choice, except that currently I'm feeling a bit about the prospective investment by government into infrastructure in the same way as I feel about the Easter Bunny. I don't think either of those exist until they show themselves. So until that, you know, that money really goes into you and you see big lots of yellow machinery on the road, it remains a wish rather than a prospect.
Yeah.
All right. Agricultural sector, something that isn't spoken about a lot. COP Agri released results this week, talking about how inflation has basically presented a double-edged sword. It's added to revenues, but also hurting consumers. They are seeing that inflation hurting their margins. The market was cheerful, though, on that performance earlier on in the week. Chris, would a COP Agri be a counter that you would consider?
To be honest, Zanotti, I've never, ever looked at it. So I'm afraid I can't. I'm going to have to give a hospital pass there.
Anything else in that agricultural sector?
Yeah, I think half of the company has got the cold problem. In other words, producing lots and lots of lovely food for export, but you've got a problem actually getting it out of the country. Now, I know that they've been working very narrowly with the Department of Trade and Industry and getting the stuff on ships, because obviously, unlike coal, you have to get it offshore in time. So that's the one problem. As far as the sort of fuel stations and convenience stores with those fuel stations, that seems to be doing well, but also those margins are going to be under pressure.
Yeah.
And we all know why, because just take a look at where the oil price is.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to your stock picks for today. Chris, your stock pick for today?
Well, everyone's going to burst out laughing when I tell them this one. Absa. You know, basically, you're sitting there on a very, very low PE. They've got a new CEO, a guy called Ari Reutenbach. And I think after many years of going nowhere, I mean, they've now got a chap running the show who really understands banking inside out. And he's one of the best bankers in the country. He really is. He's absolutely fantastic. And I think he's going to do what is required for Absa. So you take those two things into consideration, the fact that it's cheap, fact that you've got a new CEO in place, and I think he's really going to do what's required. To me, it's an absolute no-brainer.
All right. Rikus, what are you optimistic on today?
Again, following last week's theme, in the short term, I think markets are so volatile that I'm hesitant to say go and buy this or that. So I'm taking a really long macro view. I'm talking a decade out, and I'm thinking of the Satrix India Exchange Traded Fund, and it's based on a more geopolitical story where China's growth over the past decades is now at a point where it cannot maintain that, mainly because it was export-driven growth. Mm. India has been growing at a similar pace over the past 10, 15 years, but that was all based on local consumption. So they are in a perfect position to take over some of the role from China as far as exports are concerned. And they can do it now as they have a new government, which is, well, centralizing government into one policy as opposed to a lot of federal states making their own rules and regulations. So they're perfectly poised should that focus change from China to someplace else, and India is the obvious choice.
That's very, very interesting. Thank you very much to the both of you for your insights today. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, independent analyst Chris Gilmore and Rikus Reardas from PSG Wealth Sandton. From me, Zanati Kuma, and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.